Good morning. It is time to get up with bad blood. You know the Dodgers wanted a piece of the Astros. Last night, they got it. We'll start there. Then, far bigger problems for the Marlins. We'll explain how baseball is changing everything to salvage its season less than a week after it began. And to football. Aaron Rodgers uses one word to describe his situation in Green Bay that tells you everything you need to know. You'll hear what that word is in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now. From Bristol, I am Mike Greenberg, and I welcome you to Get Up, presented by FanDuel. We're on for the next 2 hours. Be with you until 10 a.m. Eastern time, when First Take will come in its entirety at its normal time. And of course, baseball, which has been in the middle of this pandemic and has been trying to rearrange everything, but has sort of made us forget about some of the storylines that we otherwise would have been talking about. Like, oh yeah, the Dodgers have beef with the Astros. Well, last night, that beef came to the surface. Joe Kelly pitching in the sixth. Alex Bregman at the plate. Oh, that one's high and tight. In fact, it's not even tight. It's behind his head on a 3-0 pitch, 96 miles an hour, right over the head of Bregman. Bregman takes first. Kelly says, all right, I'm going to yawn that one off. Two batters later, Yuli Gurriel. This is a 2-0 pitch. Oh, that's nice and inside. He's pitching deep inside on the Astros hitters. Gurriel would walk. Now Kelly is facing Carlos Correa. I'll give you one guess. Oh, that one's to the backstop. Both base runners would advance. We're going to have a little stare down action here. Another Astro hitter just barely avoiding getting hit. Later in the at-bat, it's a 2-2 pitch. He gets Correa swinging to end the inning. Kelly walks off. We got body language. We got facial expressions. We got stare downs. And now we got everybody out of the dugouts. This is the first confrontation of its sort that we've seen in the social distancing era. And it sort of fit the bill. Got a lot of yelling, a little bit of holding back, not a whole lot of physical confrontation. Dusty Baker, new manager of the Astros, very much getting into it, with the umpires in particular, with the mask. Dodgers would win 5-2. Dusty after the game, let's talk.
You know, what really enraged everybody is when, you know, he told Carlos, I mean, he struck him out. And he told him, nice swing, see, what are you supposed to do then? And then what upset me is that the umpires warned us, you know. Why don't you warn him? You know, he's the one throwing the ball, and you know, he's the one that started this mess in the first place. So, I didn't like it at all.
It's one of those things that I pitch competitively, and you know, with the no fans here, it's easy to hear some stuff. So I like picking off a couple times. It's fun, but yeah, something apparently they didn't take too kind to.
Okay, so there's that. Jeff Passan is here. Eduardo Perez is with us early this morning. Eduardo, what was your reaction to what we saw in Houston last night?
You know, it's unfortunate. I'm really happy that he missed with the fastball. And I'll tell you this right now. If that would have hit Alex Bregman in the head, it would have been this would have been a different story. That would have been life-threatening right there. But that 3-0 pitch was scary. The situation after he struck out Carlos Correa was unnecessary. Yes, I know it was a breaking ball, but still, to be able to do those facial expressions, there's no need for that. Yes, Carlos Correa said some aggressive things in spring training last year, but we have to move forward. The Houston Astros already were penalized by this. To start enforcing this is going to be unfortunate if other teams are going to try to take it upon themselves. I think Major League Baseball has to come in aggressive and let them know that there is no room for this, especially right now. As Charlie Steiner said on air, yeah, there might have not been any punches thrown, but there were still droplets in the air in that infield.
No question. So I want to make sure that I'm clear on what you're saying. The idea that there would be retribution for the Astros, particularly from the Dodgers, who they beat in the World Series in 17 at a time where essentially they were cheating in order to do it. We knew that was coming, or at least under the normal circumstances of baseball, that would be coming. But you're saying there's a big difference between hitting a guy in the butt and hitting and throwing it up and in like he did at Bregman's head.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's no need at all just to be able to go after guys if it's headhunting or even at the back or even at the buttocks of a player. That happened 2 years ago. Kelly wasn't even with the Dodgers a couple years ago. He was with the Red Sox. This is a situation right now where if it was done on purpose, it shouldn't be allowed, and there's no room for it right now in Major League Baseball, especially with what we're going through. And, oh, by the way, yes, Houston already got punished for this moving forward.
Interesting. I'm just curious to hear. Is that a change in your perspective? You and I have, we've talked on the air a number of times, but not that much, and I don't think about
this. Yeah, we have.
Is that a change in your perspective over the years, or is that something that you have always felt?
Oh, this is something that I've always felt. Now, and think about it. This happened 2 years ago. Kelly's not even part of the Dodgers 2 years ago. He was with the Red Sox. I mean, there is a difference here. And yes, the Red Sox were also affected by this with the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. But the personal issue should be handled differently.
Fair enough. All right, Jeff, what did you think? And what, if anything, do you think Major League Baseball will do as a result?
Yeah, Greeny, Joe Kelly wasn't with the Dodgers 2 years ago. He was with the Boston Red Sox, and 2 years ago was causing a fight with Tyler Austin with the Yankees. If you recall, in Boston, there are Joe Kelly Fight Club t-shirts everywhere. Now, I'm not saying that this was unquestionably intentional, because remember, Joe Kelly's a guy who has had troublesome control his entire career. He's a guy who, during the pandemic, was practicing a changeup and broke his window. That being said, this did not look good. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Major League Baseball handles this. Because remember, Alex Bregman didn't get hit. Carlos Correa didn't get hit. Is Major League Baseball really going to come in and penalize Joe Kelly or penalize anyone on either of these teams for clearing the benches simply because it's running afoul of the protocol that the league has in place? It has said it is going to be stringent in enforcement when it comes to headhunting against the Houston Astros. It does not want this sort of situation boiling over. So there is a possibility that we could see discipline, but it's going to be hard considering Bregman and Correa were not hit. If they come in with any kind of a penalty or even a fine, it's going to be contested by both sides.
Super quick, I just have a second, but Eduardo, would you do it if you were Major League Baseball now, based on what you just told me, Jeff telling us it's going to be hard to do? They didn't actually get hit by the pitches, but would you make a statement if you were baseball?
I would make a statement. I probably would not penalize right now Joe Kelly because he did not hit Alex Bregman, and the other one was a curveball. But at the same time, we have to send a message overall so the hitters know that they can go and hit and not just feel that they're being targets.
Okay, fair enough. So we'll leave that part of it there, because there's obviously the other overwhelming story with baseball, and that, of course, is the updates necessitated by the coronavirus, which are coming fast and furious. Yesterday, 4 additional members of the Marlins tested positive. That brings the total to 17 members of their traveling party. So what did that then lead to? Well, the Nationals had been scheduled to play a 3-game series against the Marlins starting Friday in Miami. A majority of the Washington players voted against that yesterday. The decision on whether games are played rests with Major League Baseball, however, not with the Nationals. But the league then did agree with the Nats and postponed all of Miami's games through Sunday. So they're now not scheduled to play basically for the rest of the week. That includes games originally scheduled for today and tomorrow in Baltimore against the Orioles, who will now instead host the Yankees for a 2-game series starting tonight. Remember, the Yankees had 2 games canceled or postponed that were supposed to be in Philadelphia over the last couple of days. So, Jeff, here they are, Major League Baseball, for perfectly understandable reasons, rearranging their schedule on the fly. What more can you tell us?
Greeny, a schedule is a schedule until it is not. And that's the scenario that Major League Baseball is facing right now with the Miami Marlins. The idea that they are even going to complete 60 games simply is not possible at this point. There are points in the schedule where they can make up that 3-game series against the Nationals, possibly. But the 4 games that they're going to be missing against the Baltimore Orioles, they don't have enough off days to do that, let alone to string series together like this. So Major League Baseball is looking at a scenario in which at least one team, or 2 if you include the Orioles, are going to be playing fewer than 60 games. Now, it helps that the Marlins are probably going to be at the bottom of the National League East, that the Orioles are going to be at the bottom of the American League East, that these aren't the teams that are going to be in playoff contention. That said, this may not be the only time we see this happen during this season, so at least there is a precedent being set early on.
And there's also precedent. I'm old enough to remember the strike year that where everything got split up.
1981.
In 81, and not every team played the same number of games. And so it's happened before, and you can just base this thing on winning percentage, even if teams don't play the same number of games. And at the end of the day, unusual circumstances, unprecedented circumstances, call for unusual measures. If every team doesn't play the same number of games this year, Eduardo, in your opinion, is that okay? Can we still go through this thing, even if some teams don't get to the full 60?
Absolutely, it's okay. I mean, there is precedent for it. I'd definitely go on win percentage. I know players, coaching staffs, and also front office personnel look and weigh at the playing percentage a lot. So I'm okay with that, especially this type of year. What I'm not okay with, if I'm the Baltimore Orioles, is I'm about to face the Miami Marlins, and now I have to go in and face the New York Yankees and Gerrit Cole in game one. You're like, that's not fair.
It's one interesting way to look at it. Guys, it's such an interesting time. I so appreciate all the perspective here and what is really an unprecedented set of circumstances for Major League Baseball. Eduardo, thank you. Jeff, stay close. We'll come back with more a little bit later. But that brings us to the NFL, because this is hitting the NFL hard. The number of football players who have opted out of the season continues to grow. The Packers' Devin Funchess joined them yesterday, saying his closest family members have experienced the life-threatening impact of COVID-19, and he's opting out for their safety and his own. Another wideout in his first year with a new team is Marquise Goodwin. He's opting out for family concerns. The new Eagle has a 5-month-old baby. And another new father also opted out yesterday. That's linebacker Dont'a Hightower, one of six Patriots that have opted out, by far the most of any team. Among the others are Patrick Chung, the starting safety, and starting right tackle Marcus Cannon. So I'm going to put this full screen up here. Just look, this is the number of players who just opted out yesterday. And you're not going to be able to read through all of the names, and we're not trying to give you this many names so that you can look at them all closely. Really, the point of it is just to get a sense of how many players in the NFL just yesterday opted out for the season. And so with that thought in mind, let me bring our insider Jeff Darlington into the conversation. Jeff, you're talking with a lot of these players. What are they saying?
Right. Well, Greeny, I think it's very interesting, because when you do kind of reach out to several players in different demographics, as I had, whether it's a young guy with no family, no immediate family, no kids, whether it's an older veteran, the interesting thing is how personalized this decision is. But what's really significant when I'm talking to these guys is some of the guys are surprised by how many have been voluntary opt-outs, not high risk. 14 of the 25 have been voluntary, and that's a big sacrifice. You don't get an accrued season. The money that the NFL does give you, $150,000, gets taken out of your next year's pay when you do get that money. So it's not like that's just an easy thing to do. The high-risk players, there's been three that have declared high risk. There's several others that probably are but haven't said specifically. Those guys are getting $350,000 in an accrued season. It makes much more sense to a lot of the players around the league. So it is a significant sacrifice for these players who are voluntarily opting out, Greeny, to do what they're doing right now.
No question. And it's starting to have a bit of an impact. We'll see how much it does on the possibility of a season getting started. Jeff, stay close, because we have a ton of football to get to with you this morning. Coming up, you have to hear what Bruce Arians has to say about Tom Brady's new teammates, who may be a little starstruck around their new quarterback. You will hear it. And then LeBron says he'll be locked in, but he's making one big change for this year's playoffs. He'll tell you what that is as we continue. Get up on ESPN. Get Up is presented by FanDuel. More ways to win. Back to the NFL. The Buccaneers arriving for training camp in Tampa yesterday. Tom Brady, now his chance to get up to speed with his new teammates without the benefit of any preseason games. Here's his new head coach, Bruce Arians, talking about how his team is adjusting.
It's a dual thing. Him learning what we do, me learning what he likes, meeting in the middle and doing a lot of different things. But I'm not going to ask the other 21 guys to learn something new when they've already had a good year of and good experiences in the offense. So I would have liked to have had a couple of preseason games, but it didn't work out that way. You would have hoped all of them could get over the awe, especially the young players of Tom Brady walking into the locker room and Gronk. But, you know, we'll get through that, I think, in a week. That maybe each guy will have enough to go talk to him.
Oh, how I wish we didn't have to bleep that word, because it was so much more effective when you actually heard him say it. Lewis Riddick and Tim Hasselbeck join Jeff and I in the football conversation here. And, Lewis, I want to start there. How about the awe factor? You're a young player on the Buccaneers, and Tom Brady walks into the locker room, and now he's my teammate and my quarterback. What is that like?
Oh, it's big time. Look, I mean, you when you are much younger than other players on your football team, and you've grown up in high school, maybe even gone through college, and you've watched these guys play, and then you finally get to see them, and you see them strapping on their pads the same way you do, and going out on the practice field and conducting themselves in that, you know, in the extreme professional way that they do. I mean, you tend to kind of sit there and just stare at them. Look, I remember as even a veteran player, you know, going out to Oakland and playing with the Raiders and seeing Tim Brown, who I had played against when I was at Pitt and he was at Notre Dame, and me just sitting there going, man, that's Tim freaking Brown right there, the Heisman Trophy winner, the Tim Brown. And you know, and it was funny because I remember, you know, just thinking, well, you know, why am I staring at him like this? But I mean, I get that. And then quickly, once you start getting into, you know, the different periods of practice and you start really competing, it kind of all dissipates and that leaves you. But I understand what Bruce is saying. I mean, that's the cool thing about sports. And that's the cool thing about being around guys like that. You want to be around people that elevate your preparation, elevate your level of play on the field, and that you have some, you know, you have a little bit of an awe factor towards. You want that. I mean, that just makes everyone else want to be better. And Tampa Bay is going to benefit from that. I'm just telling you, all those guys are going to practice harder, play harder, prepare better, because it's Tom Brady, man. He has an Aston Martin car designed for him. I mean, come on.
Hey, Tim Hasselbeck, you were telling me an interesting story this morning about another guy they call the GOAT.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, I remember when the Seattle Seahawks in 2004 signed Jerry Rice. You know, I'm in the league at the time. My brother is the starting quarterback for the Seahawks. He calls me. He's like, can you believe, like, we just signed Jerry Rice. I mean, you talk about the awe factor. You're a quarterback. And even though he's 42 years old at the time, you know, you just signed what, you know, a player that people said was not only the best wide receiver ever to play, but maybe the best football player to ever play. It was almost like he was giddy, couldn't believe it. And, you know, Lewis is right. Like, you know, after a while, like, now you're just playing football. But, you know, you weren't watching him necessarily, and this will be the case for Brady and some of the young Buccaneers players, that you weren't watching him in high school and in college. I mean, you were, but you were also watching them in grade.
Lost my audio,
like,
that,
like, that's the difference in age and the respect and all of that. So I think between, you know, that awe factor, yes, but then Lewis's point about it making everyone better. My brother also told me in Seattle what happened is all those young wide receivers that wanted to head to the locker room, you know, right after practice, they all of a sudden started sticking around and watch what Jerry did after practice and try to do the things that he was doing because he was the best. And so that's how people are going to respond to Brady.
How about the other piece of this, Jeff, if I come to you here, on the idea that Arians is bringing up that, look, we're not going to change the offense that 21 guys know because one guy doesn't know it, but that guy is the quarterback and he is Tom Brady. How's that going to work?
Well, Greeny, that was actually the plan going into this. Bruce Arians recognized right away and said to Tom Brady on the outset of the signing, hey, look, we can do this one of two ways. You could learn my offense and we don't have to teach all these other guys it. You're the greatest of all time and you have the best recall of anybody I've ever met, you and Peyton Manning. Or we could make them all learn your offense. Which one makes the most sense to you? And Tom Brady was immediately on board with the idea of learning that offense. And to the point that everybody else has been making here, Tom Brady in that locker room is also a very disarming human. When you meet him, yes, there is an awe factor, but he will immediately disengage that and make sure that all things are good with you. And I think that's going to go a long way in this atmosphere as well.
Just a super quick, because I just have 30 seconds here. Tim Hasselbeck, if he's talking about terminology and stuff. He's not talking about what plays they're going to run. He's not talking about no risk it, no biscuit kind of stuff for a 43-year-old quarterback, right?
Right.
Yeah, look, they're going to do a lot of, you know, stuff conceptually that Brady's always done. And so, you know, it is about learning the terminology. And I think we make a big deal of it sometimes, and it is hard. But just look around. Like, Peyton Manning learned a new offense. He did fine. Brett Favre went to the Jets and was running a new offense. He did just fine. Yep. You know, it's going to happen. Peyton Manning, you know, had plenty of success. I would expect Tom Brady to do the same thing. One guy learning new terminology is a lot easier than, as Bruce said, you know, 20-something guys learning a brand-new terminology.
All right, I'll leave it there for the moment. We'll come back. We have much more football to talk about this morning, including another legendary quarterback. Coming up, a shot of tequila. And that's not all. Aaron Rodgers describes the moment he found out the Packers had drafted his heir apparent. You'll hear that next. Get up on ESPN. We're back on Get Up, and you are watching us on ESPN, presented by FanDuel. And there's only one more day until the NBA season officially restarts. LeBron James and the Lakers facing off against the rival Clippers in the marquee game on opening night. And LeBron was talking yesterday about his mindset gearing up for the restart as compared to the stretch run of any other normal season.
It's definitely going to have a different mindset and a different feel to it. But I won't be turning my phones off during this run. I can't afford to. I have to continue to check in with my family, you know, every single day. Checking with my mom, making sure, you know, everything is still going well, especially in the uncertainty of what 2020 has brought to all of us. So I can't afford to do that and just lose direct contact with everybody. So, but I'll be, you know, as locked in as I can be under the circumstances. I won't cheat my teammates. I won't cheat our fans, and I won't cheat myself. So I'll be ready to go.
I love that LeBron has a throne in the bubble. And there should be one for Woj as well. Adrian Wojnarowski joins us live from inside the bubble in Orlando. And Woj, we hear LeBron talking about his mindset entering the restart. But what is the latest with his teammate Anthony Davis? Because obviously the health of those two guys is the most important factor for the Lakers.
Well, he has continued to sit out Laker practices with that eye injury that he suffered Saturday against Orlando. And, you know, Frank Vogel has said that Anthony Davis's status is unclear for the Lakers opener. You know, here's the thing for the Lakers. Seeding in this playoff tournament takes on a lot less significance because there's no home court advantage. So there's no reason for the Lakers to have to push Anthony Davis out on the court unless he's 100%. And remember, too, individually, the All-NBA voting, the MVP voting, all of that is finished. There's no motivation for players either to go out and try to pad any stats here in the last eight games. You know, the Lakers are going to be very conservative with Anthony Davis.
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. Teams like that can treat this really as sort of a preseason and just to get themselves ready for August 17th when the playoffs start. Meanwhile, injuries are a concern always, and Eric Gordon helped off the court yesterday. What can you tell us about that?
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good!
Bagged! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
X-rays were negative last night on that left ankle, Greeny, but I'm told the early estimate for Eric Gordon is potentially 1 to 2 weeks out of the Rockets lineup. They'll know more today. They'll see how the ankle settled overnight, but he's an important part of this team. He's likely their best defender, and they need him to be their third scorer behind Westbrook and James Harden. And this is a team, Houston, that is only a game and a half up from the seventh seed. And in this first round of the postseason, you want to avoid the Lakers or the Clippers. And so not having him potentially for most or potentially all of these seeding games, could be a real issue for the Rockets.
I agree. And that's a good point that you bring up. It's something for everyone to think about. Home court advantage doesn't mean anything. But seeding means a lot because it depends on who it is you wind up playing. Meanwhile, a team trying to get its way into the playoffs is New Orleans, and Zion is back in the bubble. What can you tell us about his return?
Well, he was able to practice with the team yesterday after clearing quarantine. And so he potentially has two practices, yesterday, today, and then a morning shoot-around on Thursday before he would have to play his first game after having been away from practice for 11 days. And I think the opportunity for him to get enough reps here this week before the restart's first overall game against Utah on Thursday, I think the opportunity for him to play has grown with the fact that he was able to get on the court yesterday. And I think there's some optimism that New Orleans could have Zion there for that first game, and certainly by Saturday against the Clippers. And every game is very important for them in this 8-game run as they try to get into that play-in tournament against Memphis.
No question. Incredibly important to watch and see if Zion, because they're a different team when he's been out there. Woj, outstanding to see you. Thank you, my man. We'll check in again tomorrow. Meanwhile, let's run the bases around all the action from Major League Baseball yesterday. First meeting of the season between the Dodgers and Astros. We led with this. That was the bottom of the sixth. Benches clear after Joe Kelly nearly hit three Astro hitters and then jawed with Carlos Correa after an inning-ending strikeout. Dodgers wound up winning the game 5-2. We're going to talk about all this with Buster in just a second. Meanwhile, let me show you Anthony Rendon. He made his Angels debut last night after missing the first four games of the season with an oblique injury, and he got his first hit in style. Boy, that is a laser. Two-run shot in the bottom of the eighth. The Angels beat the Mariners by a 10-2 score. And then how about Javi Baez crushing his first two home runs of the season, helped power the Cubs to an 8-5 win over the Reds. It was Baez's seventh career multi-home run game. Cubs are off to a good start. They're 4-1. Last time they started that way, they won the World Series, 2016. Meanwhile, here's the big story. Major League Baseball postponing all of the Marlins games through Sunday as a result of the recent coronavirus outbreak. Four more players testing positive yesterday, so the total is now 17 members of their traveling party. The remaining two games between the Yankees and Phillies were also postponed. So the Yankees have now instead traveled to Baltimore, where they will play a two-game series starting tonight. Teams moving all over the place. And it led Andrew McCutchen, now on the Phillies, to tweet this, quote, "I come on Twitter to find out if we're playing or not. I don't wait for a text because I know the media knows the answer before us. LOL." So here's Buster Olney. A lot to get to this morning, Buster. Is McCutchen speaking for a lot of players in expressing frustration with the sort of fluid circumstances as he seems to be doing?
Greeny, I think his text reflects a skepticism among a lot of players about how Major League Baseball handles its business. And I heard a lot of that yesterday in phone calls and text, especially in the aftermath of the Marlins situation. People around the game, players asking, how was it that after they had a positive test on Friday and then three more on Sunday that the Marlins and Phillies were allowed to play? And so it was interesting in the last 24 to 36 hours, the players are beginning to flex their muscles a lot more to try to dictate what's going to happen. Yesterday, the Nationals players voting that they didn't want to play in Miami this weekend. It wasn't something that they wanted to do. Anthony Rizzo of the Cubs, Joey Votto of the Reds exchanging text messages asking, hey, how are you feeling? Are we going to play today? I think more of that is going to happen, Greenies, these hot spots pop up. Because let's face it, push comes to shove. Rob Manfred can't tell these players to play a game. And especially with how we've seen how the schedule can be fluid, I think the players will push back a lot.
I get that totally. And I think at some point a decision is going to have to be reached, because if the idea here is that once a player tests positive on any team, that team has to shut down for any period of time, this is just a waste of time. That it's inconceivable that that isn't going to happen. So whatever the protocols are, they can't be that, right, Buster? And I totally get it. If the players say we don't want to play, then they're just not going to be able to do it. I guess what I'm trying to say is I see both sides of it. I understand the frustration of the players, but the idea that you're just going to stop the moment we have a positive test, Buster, I think means you're done before you even begin. Does that make sense?
I think that what needs to happen is that Major League Baseball needs to reestablish the credibility of the health and safety protocol that is put in place, because it's clear from the reaction of the Marlins and the Phillies on Sunday that there was a lot of confusion about what was going to happen and what should have happened on Sunday.
All right, that I totally get. Let me then get you to the other. We led this morning with what happened last night with the Astros and the Dodgers, and it's not a surprise. The Dodgers lost to the Astros in the World Series in 2017 and the cheating and all the rest of that. And so last night, Joe Kelly certainly looked like he was throwing at three of them, including right at the head of Alex Bregman. What was your reaction to all of that yesterday?
It's interesting, when these situations pop up, we get asked, is there going to be retaliation? And so often it just comes down to the personality of the pitcher on the mound. In the years that I covered the Yankees, Andy Pettit hated the retaliation stuff. He couldn't stand it. Anybody you talk to who played with Joe Kelly will tell you, he's okay with it. And in watching that last night, it felt like that when he went to that 3-0 count on Alex Bregman, it's like the light switch went on. And not only did he throw the pitch behind Bregman, when Bregman was at first base, he was repeatedly throwing pickoffs. You wonder what the intent was there. That curveball to Carlos Correa, the jawing. I think Joe Kelly has no problem with the Astros thinking he's a little bit crazy. I wouldn't be surprised if, depending on the personality of the pitchers, we have more of this with the Astros as we go along.
He didn't actually hit anyone. Do you expect baseball to do anything about it?
No, because I think they will follow the lead of the umpires who were on site, who waited to actually give a warning later after the Correa pitch.
Okay. Robert Stanberry, only the third, with the very latest and a very interesting stretch of baseball. Buster, thank you. Now to the NFL, where, of course, one of the most surprising moments of the entire just passed off season still has to be when the Packers traded up to draft Jordan Love as Aaron Rodgers' potential replacement in the first round of the draft. On a recent podcast, Rodgers went into more detail of how he reacted to that pick.
Pour myself some tequila and FaceTimed and talked to a bunch of people that night. And the next day I called Jordan. I don't harbor any ill will about it. Like, was I bummed out? Of course. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be, you know, like I wanted to play my entire career in Green Bay. I love the city. I grew up there. Really, got there. I was 21. I'm 36 now. You know, a lot changes during that time. But look, I get it. I see it completely clearly. And I'm not bitter about it. Just kind of is what it is.
Boy, there was a lot in that that is interesting. And let's put the tequila aside for a moment, because that's what everyone seemed to focus on. But, Lewis, I want to focus in on one word. He uses the word wanted. That is the past tense of the word want. So that's really no – there's no uncertainty in that, right? That's Aaron Rodgers basically saying, I know that I am no longer going to play my entire career in Green Bay.
Without a doubt. Look, and he's been through this before. He's been on the other side of it. He's been the one who has been replacing a legend. So I think what he offered you there was a window into, you know, his innermost thoughts, into the competitive makeup of one of the greatest quarterbacks to play in the NFL ever. And he has kind of shown you that, hey, look, despite everything that I have accomplished and everything that I want, I also understand that the business of the NFL doesn't wait for anyone and doesn't cater to anyone's personal feelings or desires or wants. People will move on from you in a heartbeat when it makes sense from a business perspective. And that's what he sees being the writing on the wall for his career in Green Bay. It's interesting to hear him talk about you know, his time in Green Bay as being one where, you know, he grew up there. Because a lot of times, you know, you hear about players talk about those kind of things when they're in college and they had that same kind of connection to their alma mater about how they grew up as an 18, 19, 20-year-old. You know, he's talking about being in Green Bay, Wisconsin as kind of like the same thing that you go through when you're going through college, which I think is really cool, especially for someone as good as him. But he understands that his time in Green Bay is going to be directly proportionate to the development of Jordan Love and how quickly he comes along. And then whether or not it just makes for them sense for them salary cap-wise to move on and it's something that they can live with. And that's, you know, that's a very humbling type of thing, I'm sure, for someone as great as him to say, they're moving on from me. I'm the great Aaron Rodgers, and they're moving on from me. I mean, it kind of lends some real personal, you know, kind of, you know, kind of characteristics to this game that oftentimes we dismiss as being, you know, something that's non-existent, and it is existent. These guys really do take this game personal.
No question. Jeff, I'm trying to read the look on your face. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't believe Aaron. I'm not calling him a liar, but I don't think he believes that he's done. I think in his head, and look, I shouldn't be jumping into someone else's thoughts here, but to me, Aaron Rodgers is not the one to simply resign his job to a guy who has yet to even step on an NFL football field. How many times have we seen a first-round pick at quarterback not develop into, let alone a starter, the replacement for one of the legends of the game? So while Aaron is saying that, I think that there is a psychological factor here also with him basically saying, oh, really? He's your guy? Let's see him prove it. And Aaron is the type of guy who plays those kinds of head games. And I'm not so sure that he's not doing that right here.
I like that take. Meanwhile, Tim, what do you expect from Rodgers on the field this year?
Well, I think we would all agree we probably have a pretty ticked off Aaron Rodgers. And you just look at, you know, how he's played the last couple of years. Look, I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be poised to have a really good season. This is going to be, not that he's not been motivated in the past, but look, I could see Aaron throwing over 40 touchdown passes, being aggressive with the football, and basically kind of along the lines of what Jeff is saying is going, oh yeah, like how does that look now? Because I just threw 40 touchdown passes, and you know what? I'm going to do it again in 2021, and now all of a sudden that pick of Jordan Love, you know, then it looks even worse. And oh, by the way, remember we should have taken a wide receiver because that was a need for us. And then remember that season where Devin Funchess, he opted out, and so we didn't have the wide receiver that we signed in free agency. I still went and threw 40 touchdowns. I do think there is an element of that. I think it could happen. He's still that good of a player. And that's why this feels weird. And when he says the word wanted, yeah, we've seen Joe Montana play somewhere else. We've seen Peyton Manning do it. Brady's doing it. But those guys, it didn't feel like they had as much good football still ahead of them as it feels like Aaron Rodgers has right now.
Real quick, Lewis, in your view, is there enough around him? Go ahead.
Yeah, what I was going to say was, I think what you saw last year, though, is what you saw a transition in terms of how Matt LaFleur really sees the Green Bay offense going forward. It's not going to be the same quarterback-centric offense that it was under Mike McCarthy, where Aaron is just carrying the team on his back. You saw that transition start to happen. This is becoming an Aaron Jones type of team. This is becoming a Sean McVay type of offense, meaning it's going to run through the running game, and obviously the quarterback's going to play a huge part in it. And I think that's kind of going to ease the transition a little bit to Jordan Love. That's not to say that Aaron's not going to be motivated. Of course, he's not just going to lay down and say, here, Jordan, it's your job. But I think the transition's already in place by virtue of the way they're trying to run this offense and the fact that they traded up to draft Jordan Love. So eventually they're going to try and move on from him. That doesn't mean that Aaron isn't going to maybe have one of his, you know, some very good seasons here over the next 1 to 2 years. But I think the writing is on the wall, and he's acknowledging that, although he's still going to go out there and perform like the all-pro that he is.
All right, we'll have more on this a little bit later in the show, but we have other matters of football to get to. Coming up next, when will we see Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields on the field? The president of the NCAA made a very important statement about college football yesterday. You will hear it next. You are watching Get Up, and we are presented by FanDuel. And we are officially 1 month away from the scheduled start of the college football season, but so many questions still remain. Our Heather Dinich spoke with the president of the NCAA, Mark Emmert, about where he stands on how to start the season 1 month away from kickoff.
I think that a delayed start may well make sense, whether it's for football or anything else.
we do get to see what happens when people return to campus. We get to learn a lot from what's going on with professional sports.
What was your reaction when you saw the news of the Marlins?
Well, I certainly wasn't surprised. I would be shocked if, as we get into college sports, that we don't have this occur. You know, it's not whether someone comes down with a virus, it's what you do when it happens.
So again, that was Heather on the phone with Mark Emmert yesterday. Heather is with us this morning. Paul Feinbaum is here, and Tim Hasselbeck continues with us as well. Heather, what are the most important things you took away from those comments and your conversation with Mark Emmert in general?
Well, 2 points. The first, in regards to the delayed start, the more people in positions of power like Emmert who speak that publicly, the more likely it seems it's going to actually happen and the season gets pushed back. The second point would be what he said in reaction to the Marlins. It's what you do when you get those positive tests. And he told me that as of right now, he thinks it should be an individual campus testing program. I know conferences are trying to do better than the NCAA recommended 72-hour window testing before competition. But Greeny, I'm being told it's difficult for some schools right now to get those test results back within a 72-hour window. So testing continues to be one of the focal points for conferences. And because it varies so much from state to state and county to county, it can still be an issue as campuses return with 30 to 40, 50,000 students joining those football players.
No, no question about it. Paul, so you hear Emmert there suggesting that a delayed start might make sense. What makes sense to you?
Mark Emmert is making sense, and I think the end of the world is upon us, because I find myself agreeing with what he told Heather yesterday. But interestingly, as he is telling Heather that, as he is saying, listen, we need more data. We need to see what the NFL is going to do. We need to see what happens when students get on campus. His organization is also green-lighting schools like Oklahoma and Kansas to play a week earlier. So there's so much contradiction here. If you're going to play a week earlier, what good does that do other than it gives you an advantage in the event that you have an outbreak? So there is so many mixed messages, which brings us back to the original point that we've been having for months. Nobody is in charge. Mark Emmert has the title, but he's just offering advice. That's it right now.
That's correct. There is no obligation on the part of, candidly, almost anyone to follow what it is that he's suggesting. And Tim Hasselbeck, you brought up an interesting thought in our meeting this morning. On a day where yesterday, where we saw so many NFL players opting out of the season, many of them leaving a lot of money on the table, what thought did you have as regards college football?
Well, seeing that and knowing that, you know, the NFL has done a pretty good job because they've had to negotiate with the NFLPA in terms of making the environment for NFL players safe. Think about if you're a college player where, you know, there hasn't been that negotiation. There hasn't been an advocate for you doing that. And so now just put yourself in the position of being a 19-year-old college football player that's got to walk into a coach's office and say, hey, you know what, coach, I just don't feel safe. I'm not at high risk. I don't feel safe doing that. And what type of reaction you think you might get? Sure, there might be some coaches that are understanding and they'll put their arm around you. But there'll be plenty of other coaches that would really start to put pressure on that young player. And so I think when you look at that, this is a really, I feel, kind of a dangerous situation and probably scary situation to be in if you are a young college football player that isn't really sure about playing.
Heather, what are you hearing about that side of this?
Well, no athlete scholarship is going to be in jeopardy if they don't want to play. Let's start there. But that could create a backlog, right? What I'm hearing is that student athletes want to play. I think that's very important. And I think that's one of the reasons that you're seeing a decrease in positive tests around campuses. It's because they get the message. The student athletes are trying what they can do to follow those CDC guidelines and the athletic guidelines on campus. But you know what? I'm also told there's nothing a coach can do in terms of when an athlete says, you know, I don't want to go to practice because I'm afraid of the coronavirus. How do you know that they're saying that and they just don't want to go to practice at 6 a.m.? So there's also that issue as well.
What do you think, Paul? Well, let me hear from Paul on the quickly. Go ahead, Paul.
Most of the coaches are impervious to this virus. I know that sounds crass, but their job is to win college football games. And on campuses where you've had outbreaks of 35 or 40 or 50 positive testing, the coaches are saying we have to play. None of these programs with those outbreaks have been shut down, Greeny. So I don't think college football head coaches are really paying much attention to what their players are saying. They may have to at some point, but not yet.
Tim, I got 15 seconds for a quick final thought. Go ahead.
Well, listen, yeah, I'm sure you're not going to lose your scholarship, but like life can be made miserable. I mean, we've seen it before with other players that maybe, you know, haven't seen eye to eye with a head coach. So I think there's that aspect of it. And yeah, I think the vast majority of players are going to want to play, much like the NFL. I think the vast majority of NFL players are going to want to play. But that doesn't mean there isn't, you know, more than you would think that are uncomfortable with it, especially players that are looking at it and going, wait, I might be done with football in a year or 2 years from now. I have no NFL aspirations. Like, I'm not playing at Clemson. I'm playing at Wake Forest. Like, you have a different feeling about it, you know, if that's your situation.
Might be. I have to leave it there for the moment, guys. Outstanding. This continues to be probably the most interesting of all of the different subsets of the reaction to coronavirus in sports. Meanwhile, as we continue, this was totally different yesterday. Trash can revenge in Houston. A near brawl between the Astros and Dodgers. Is this a sign of things to come? The answer on the way. Get up on ESPN.